everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of Comfort Food, the podcast all about arts and media that people love and the people that love them. Today I'm joined by a very special guest. She's a streamer, an activist, and a mother. It's Zombie Kills. Welcome, Zombie. How are you doing?
Hello. Yeah, Zombie Kills. You can call me Zombie. Everybody okay. Calls me Zombie. It's easy. It's like more familiar. It's like a first name.
Right.
I'm down with it.
So, Zombie, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today?
So we're going to talk about my Lord and Savior, Kipo and the Age of the Wonder Beasts. It's a great show. I guess it's supposedly targeted at children, but I've found it easy to like devour as an adult. It's out of DreamWorks Studios. It's based off of a webcomic by Rad Seacrest.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's just, to me, everything that Tank Girl is, but in kid form. And I kind of love it.
So tell me a little bit about how you found out about Kipo, because I think my girlfriend told me at some point that she was watching like the first couple episodes, but for I think school reasons she probably ended up falling off of it. But so up until when you hit me up about doing this episode, I hadn't really heard anything about it, which is shocking to me.
It's shocking to me. So like, I saw it, so my kids and I'm always looking for stuff to watch with my kids. Like, stuff that's, like, kid-friendly, but not, like, to the point where, like, your brain feels like it's oozing out of your ears while you're watching as an adult. Stuff mm-hmm. that's clever and that's layered. And then, you know, I also like stuff that still has that cartoon style, you know, that
yeah.
I enjoy. Not that weird, you know, Pixar kind of animation, but like an actual cartoon, you know. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching cartoons, as most of us old folks did.
I did,
so,
too.
Yeah, so watching cartoons is so, you know, fun for me. And I mm-hmm. saw Kipo on Netflix when it popped up, and I noticed that there were black characters in the art graphic, and I was like, holy cat, be like, it's black cartoon people, we have to try this, you know. And then I read it up and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like dystopian future type stuff, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's post-apocalyptic type of situation, which is 100% my brand and like my lifestyle. Like, anything post-apocalyptic, dystopian future type books, movies, television, I consume rapidly. Like, I mm-hmm. love it.
Actually, I think when you hit me up to talk about it, you specifically described it as post-apocalyptic hip-hop cartoon goodness.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's post-apocalyptic hip-hop cartoon goodness. And that's literally all the things I love. I love hip-hop music, and I love post-apocalyptic stuff. Mm-hmm. So it drew me in so fast. Like, I don't know, you started watching it, so how did you feel? Like, did you just get sucked in?
Yeah, I really did. And when I really didn't know what I was expecting going in, because, you know, you see the art style and the main characters obviously all younger. So when you said post-apocalyptic hip-hop cartoon goodness, I was expecting something maybe a little bit more, I was thinking, like, okay, something like kind of gritty, almost like the kind of thing you'd hear where it's people finding old, like, maybe like kind of gritty Wu-Tang kind of music. And
I mean we do have a Wu-Tang member in the show.
That was I popped off when I heard the Jizz's voice, because I'm a huge Wu-Tang fan. But oh my god, I completely got derailed. So when I first started watching it, I was like, wow, this show isn't gritty, it's happy, it's goofy, it's cartoony, but it respects its audience so well.
And it's a little gritty. There's a little grit to mm-hmm. it. Like Scarlemagne is grit. Controlling mm-hmm. humans and exploiting them and wanting to suppress others is pretty gritty. It's a pretty gritty theme, like, for me. And the Newton Wolves, you know, they're pretty gritty.
That entire backstory with Wolf, spoilers for the show, by the way.
Spoilers. It's very deep, and it's very, like, traumatic, and it goes through trauma. Like, one of the things I enjoy about the show is it shows Wolf literally being, you know, she's being traumatized. She was befriended and exploited and traumatized, and she's trying to work through her trauma to be able to love fully and not with fear with Kipo. And that's a big theme, I feel like, for a show to touch for children.
I absolutely agree. I mean, growing up, I mean, one of the other things I was going to say about the show and immediately getting sucked in was, you know, I remember as a kid waking up on Saturday mornings and just waking up in the mornings in general to watch something like SpongeBob or Ben 10, Alien Force or Pokemon or whatever. And a lot of that kind of show is either not necessarily plot driven, so it's harder to address those kinds of stories and kind of go on those journeys with characters, or it's like kind of supposed to be like pre-macho masculine type thing because it's all marketed at boys and it's supposed to be like cool and edgy. And I think that that's kind of to those shows' detriment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I was one of the things that I really did want to talk about was Wolf's journey in particular.
Wolf's journey to me, showing a wounded black girl who has been hurt by familial, you know, things was very poignant to me. So I have a lot of family trauma and trust issues that I've worked through over the years. And I'm a lot of other black girls do too. And it's not something we talk about, is like mental health issues or being scared of things. In the black community, we're always supposed to be like super strong warriors, like she is, you know, all the time. And we're not supposed to have these weak moments. And so with her seeing those moments where she's just like so afraid and she just flees the situation, or, you know, she can't handle it, and or she just grabs Kipo and holds her so tightly, you know, and she's, there's tears, you know, like there, those moments being portrayed in blackness are important and they need to be shown and they need to be represented. And it was great for me. And it was great for me to see my kids do that. And it's like, oh, her parents hurt her. And it's like some, you know, people's parents hurt them, and some foster parents hurt their kids. Like, these are things that happen. And I just felt like it was so beautifully done. It wasn't overdone or too traumatic, but it was enough to say anybody can hurt you, but just because people hurt you doesn't mean there aren't people that will love you just as much as people hurt you. Because Kipo loves her 1,000 times more than the people that hurt her, you know? And I love that. Just like I love, you know, how we're seeing, you know, homosexuality in this show, black homosexuality, you know, like people of color being, you know, LGBTQIA and addressing it at a young age in a very, like, tactful way. Because there's a lot of feelings when you're Kipo's age, you know, like it's a lot of feelings. And they touched it. They were direct about it. They didn't dance around it. And then in the second season, they actually went straight for it, like even more, you know?
Yeah, and it was, and I think that was another thing that I really liked about the show, just generally the way it kind of handled younger romance, especially with Benson and Troy, watching them interact in a way that didn't feel, because in a lot of cartoons you see romance between two characters and it's kind of portrayed in a weird way where there's like a lot of jealousy and like people like trying to make other people mad at the other person to get their attention and that kind of thing. And it was so refreshing to see Benson and Troy just being good to each other, even though they weren't like necessarily together at that point.
It's so cute. And like, I also like the fact that like music is this unifying theme right through the show. So like music is this like cultural olive branch throughout the entire show, and it's a way that people express emotions in the show. And like, okay, so Benson is a straight up like hip hop head, and then he meets Troy, and Troy is like a straight up hip hop head. And it shows that you don't have to be a specific type of gay either, you know, like a pandered stereotype of gay.
Right.
They're like two dudes who love hip hop and are out, you know, going through adventures, and, you know, they're not stereotypical in any form. Like, nothing about them is stereotypical, just like nothing about Kipo is stereotypical, and Wolf isn't some stereotypical character of a black person. So the depth of the people of color makes me happy. The presence of a whole home for Kipo, her dad being such a dope nerd, also Sterling, her dad's voice, you know,
so surprised. I didn't know that he sang.
Dude, I love him. I just love him. I love him in This Is Us. It's another bit of comfort food media that I like to consume. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when I heard his voice, I was like, get out of here now. This is literally the coolest thing. And he's so, their relationship is so close. And I love the bond there. I love my dad. He's my BFF. And me and my dad are super nerds. We go to cons together. Like, we're super nerds, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, that also touched on, like, that whole vibe. Like, this show, and I'm, like, you know, a black girl who likes, you know, punk music and likes to play guitar and sing and rap and all kinds of stuff. So for me, it's like, Kipo is, like, a little me. But then there's Wolf, who's also, like, another part of me. And then there's Benson, who's also another part of me. And then there's Dave, that's the sarcastic, ridiculous part of me. Because Dave is so great.
Yeah, I talked to you about this a little bit over DMs and stuff. But I've been trying to consume as many podcasts and YouTube reviews and articles and people writing about it. And I was surprised to see how mixed people were on Dave, but I mean, I loved Dave. I think he and Benson together, their chemistry was so good for kind of allowing the subtlety that they played certain things to shine while also having comedic relief to keep it from getting too heavy and from weighing certain things down.
Dave is like, he's invaluable to that show.
He's great.
Dave also, like, Dave touches some real stuff. Like, he points out those moments and he's like, y'all better appreciate this moment. Like, you know, he's like, y'all better appreciate this. And he also is that voice inside of you that's like, let's be impulsive. Let's do crazy shit. Like, he's that person who, when you're listening to Dave, Dave's all of us. You know what I'm saying? Like, Dave's all of us sometimes. Everybody's impulse is Dave. And I love him for it. And I love the balance because Benson is a little, you know, more on, he errs on the side of things. And if he didn't have Dave to push him, he wouldn't always come through the way that he comes through. Mm-hmm. Like, Dave pushes Benson to be the best Benson's gonna be, and I don't think that Benson would have survived so long out on the surface without Dave.
Absolutely.
I don't think he would have, just like I don't think Kipo would have survived. Well, she probably would have survived because she's got a knack for finding her way, you know, letting goodness kind of light the way for her. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, Wolf survived as, like, a very small kid by herself.
Yeah. And she's, also,
it's tough.
Also, sorry to interrupt you there, but going off of kind of the chemistry between Dave and Benson, I think that also, you know, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but that chemistry between Kipo and Wolf is also so paramount to letting both of those characters shine.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you see Kipo kind of, you know, like you said, using one of the universal themes of this show, and I guess humanity too, in music, and trying to use that as a way to break through to Wolf and to kind of help her break through her shell. You know, you don't really see Wolf sing until, or really even appreciate much music until towards the end when she's starting to open up more. And I think that little moment of seeing her start to sing is so powerful, and so it feels so good to see after, you know, seeing her be more attached to Kipo and then be more tolerant of the mutes that they have with them.
It's growth. It's like consistent growth, right? Like, the whole time you're seeing her work through her trauma and process it, and at times it takes her over her, as trauma does. At times she needs to go, and Benson's just like, you know, he gets really real with her a couple of times, and I won't spoil the whole thing, but there's a lot of working through trauma that Wolf does. And as cool as you think Wolf is and how strong you think she is, you realize that is not really that she's strong. It's that she's hardened, you know, herself, and that her strength is actually in her, like, ability to overcome this trauma. But she was forced to be very alone and very hard at a very young age. And
yeah,
that's tough. And surviving in that environment, I mean, the mutes, as hysterical and great as they are, like, the mutes are amazing, Like, are they not the like the Muse?
They are the best. The frogs. The I forgot what the rabbits
skunks.
Are called. But
we got skunks. We got the hummingbirds. We've got the timber cats. The timber cats
are great.
Are so great.
I think obviously I love anything favorite. That Steve Blum is involved in, but like they're so cute.
They're so cute, and I'll say this: like probably my personal favorite. Yeah, probably the Timber Cats. I'm just going to have to say, I'm going to have to give to them. But I do like the frogs.
Yeah, no, I love the frogs so much.
The frogs kind of remind me of the frogs from, what was that kids' movie?
The claymation one, Flushed Away or something like that?
No, not that one. The one that was like, it was a DreamWorks movie, I think, and the kid made a time machine. Meet the Robinsons.
Oh, yeah.
And the frogs were in suits, and they all talked like Frank Sinatra, and they pretended to be mobsters and threw somebody in the trunk of a car at some point. Like, that reminds that reminds me of them, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I like the character arc and the development that they did with the frogs, like, a lot. Like, I like how they really went into their personalities. For me, it definitely... I don't know. It added a lot more depth, too, because you really start to see the power that just being a good person can have, but also how stressful being a good person is.
Mm-hmm.
Being and a good person is not without its stressors at all. Right. I think you can agree. Like, what do they say? Absolutely. No good deed goes unpunished. Mm-hmm. And in Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts, you see that no good deed goes unpunished, but you also see that, like, good does prevail at the end of the day, and that sometimes the rewards are so much more rich than the stuff that you manage to lose for being good.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it feels like, you know, being good can make you feel beat down and exhausted and tired, but like with Kipo, you kind of see that you should just never grow weary of doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Like, for me watching it with my kids, that's a great message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, going back to Kipo as a main character, she carries that message so well. Like, you see the scene with the giant monkey mute, where it's kind of going on a rampage, and she starts singing to it, just, like, walks up to it, like, without any fear in her heart, and just keeps singing. And... I think that scene in particular is so powerful and does such a good job of conveying, like, who she is as a character.
Yeah, I love when she had the chance in the second season to escape and leave Jamak behind in the bunny den. And she could have left him. Like, he was about to kill her. Like, he was gonna sacrifice her. And yet again, for a second time, she saved his life. You know, in that moment... Mm-hmm. She thought she was selfless. And it's like selflessness is her instinct, you know, and everyone else is always kind of trying to suppress that a little bit. You know, like they're like, you know, selflessness will get you, you know, sacrificed. And she doesn't care. And her friendship is the same way. She's just all in with her friendships. She's all in with everything she does. She does it with her whole heart. And... As a black woman in America today, it's so nice to see that from us, you know, in a cartoon. And I know it sounds silly because it's a cartoon, but it's not. I'm so tired of doing good sometimes, you know, like I'm tired. I think every black person in America right now is pretty exhausted, you know, to be fair.
Right.
And then... You see something like this, and it's just got this subtle way of, like, reaching into your bones and saying, you know, don't get tired of doing good. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get tired of being a good person. Don't get tired of rising above. Don't get tired of reaching out and trying to make the world a better place. And as an activist, that's literally my core of my being. So to see that exemplified in a TV show is really righteous. The TV show is kind of radical. It's like this radical level of kindness and this radical level of selflessness that I honestly think we need in our world right now. We need radical love to change things. It's going to be very radical. Loving people selflessly is kind of a radical idea, don't you think? Like,
yeah, I think so, especially when, you know, there's so much of society, especially American society, where things like things that discourage loving your fellow man is discouraged just by societal systemic issues, whether it's racism, sexism, homophobia, all of that.
Yeah.
And even
I agree. I think it's hard. I think radical self-love and radical selflessness in a consumer-based, you know, society is very brave.
Yeah, especially, you know, touching on self-love especially it's so frequently lost. You know, you see people talking about how since social media has become more prevalent, people find themselves less happy with themselves because they always see an idealized version of another person's life somewhere on the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm not going to say that social media is entirely bad because it's what my entire creative output is based on. But I think that that's an important thing to take away, is that, you know, that self-love that Kipo has and brings out in other people is really resonant to me. I was gonna wait a little later to ask you about your favorite episode, but I'll just jump right in. When I first started watching this show, the first thing I tweeted about it was the first thing that I said to anyone about it, was that episode 3 broke me. And I don't want to get too far into it because I have a feeling a lot of the people who are listening to this already know, but episode 3 talks a lot about loss and potential of loss. And about a year ago, actually a year and 5 days ago, the person who is like pivotal to my career, super inspirational to everything that I do on the internet, and honestly my mindset for a lot of the things I do on the internet, was found dead in the, I think in the Hudson River, after jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge. And
I'm so sorry, that's terrible.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
And that idea, his name was Desmond Damofa, aka Etika, and he had a lot of mental issues starting at a certain point in 2019, and then
I think I know this person. This is the YouTuber.
Yeah, the YouTuber. He's famous for like his Smash Bros. Reactions and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got he had a lot of people on social media kind of bringing him down, dragging him, saying that all that he was doing, all the things he was doing was for for like a bit for attention and all that stuff. And you know, watching him kind of lose his grip because people were just hurting him so much and rejecting his mental health issues was so hurtful and so hard to see. To slide into the replies or the comment section of any YouTube video he put out, or any stream even, and just see a bunch of clown emojis just mocking him and mocking his anguish was really hard. And it's been a loss that, even though I never really knew him personally, has really affected me. And a lot of talking about loss, I think, is one of the things that specifically the third episode does super well. Sorry, that was like a huge tangent, but it really hit me hard in that respect.
I agree with you, actually. So my best friend, 8 years ago on May 25th, committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I witnessed my friend commit suicide.
I'm so sorry.
A little heavier. And it's something that I still struggle with talking about a little mm-hmm. bit, but loss never goes away, you know? It just changes, takes different forms, and does different things. And episode 3 is definitely a very good episode for people who have lost things in their life or are dealing with even the concept of such loss. And it mm-hmm. kind of is good with dealing with like the loss of our life as we know it now.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like this whole show is kind of good at dealing with the loss that we're dealing with now of like the world as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole show is Kipo going to the surface after she's been living underground in a burrow, you know. And she's been raised underground in this burrow. She's known this life her whole life. She doesn't know any difference that she's underground. You know, she just knows the stories she hears about the surface. And for her to go to the surface is like, damn, everything's scary. All this stuff is crazy. But, like, I was always this loving person in the borough, and I'm not trying to let the world change me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of where we are right now, right? Mm-hmm. We've been raised one way our entire existence, you know, currently us existing on the planet right now.
Right.
We've always been able to kind of just freely go about and do whatever with no real acknowledged threat to our person. Because, I mean, you could die in a car crash, but we don't think about it all the time, right? Because anxiety would be out the fucking roof. but the thing is, like, now our lives have changed and we've kind of had to adapt to becoming these burrow people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of crazy to watch the show and deal with, like, it's not safe to do this. It's not safe. Hey, you can't do that. It's not safe. Mm-hmm. But still trying to be kind at the same time. Mm-hmm. Still trying to think we're all equal at the same time of dealing with this crazy situation of the surface. Is like this allegory for, like, the pandemic almost. It's like, you know, you're out here and we're trying to be the best, and all these people are grouped up and they're all in these separate groups and everybody's kind of spacing away from each other. And, you know, but at the end of the day, like, this kind of chaotic good, I'll say, Kipo, because she's straight up chaotic good, right? Like, she really is. She's just chaotic. And she's wild in her goodness, and she's unlimited in her beauty and niceness.
And unwavering, and, too.
She is unwavering. She cannot be tamed, but she deals with that, too, a lot. Sometimes you burn yourself out, and Kipo starts to burn out in season two. And she starts to struggle with control and understanding that sometimes you can't just rush into things, right? Mm-hmm. She's starting to learn patience, and she's starting to learn all these things she had no concept of in the borough because she was safe. And watching, like, her dad be like, chill the hell out, Kipo, you know, and, like, the stuff that she's had to go through learning, you know, herbs in, herbs out, you know, like, her learning self-care and to find things to ground her is, like, this experience I relate with. And I'm sure you do, too. I think everybody can relate. Like, we have to find these ways to, like, take care of ourselves, because sometimes you can burn out like a flame doing good. Even doing good can be exhausting. Right now, with what we're seeing in our industry, in the games industry.
Oh, my God.
There's a lot going on, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just burnt out as a woman, right? Mm-hmm. I'm burnt out. As a black person, I'm burnt out. As a black woman, I'm, like, extra burnt out. Like, and so for me, watching and seeing this, I'm like, I have to herbs in, herbs out. Like, I have to turn off Twitter sometimes. I have to go play Animal Crossing or go put on some Kipo, because I've been rewatching Kipo so much. I've watched season two like three times already.
Oh wow.
And I have to just pull back and realize I can do good, I can be good, but I also have to be, like, intentional and specific with the good that I'm doing.
And good to yourself.
And I also have to be good to me. Yeah. And that's also important for me to try to teach my kids, because we don't grow up learning about self-care, really.
No.
We don't grow up learning about taking care of yourself. When we're teaching kids things, we teach them be nice to others, right? Be mindful of others' feelings. All these things about others. But we don't really say be kind to yourself. Care about your feelings, listen to your heart, because that would be considered what, selfish in our society, quote unquote, right? And I like that Kipo's teaching them these lessons. I like that, you know, Finley the other day, my son, he's neurodiverse, he has sensory processing disorder, so he can seem a little chaotic. If you don't know him, he is like, it's like he's got rocket fuel running through his veins. He's just moving a million to nothing all the time, and people often mistake it for ADHD. Mm-hmm. And the other day he was saying herbs in, herbs out when he was stressed out, because my son has what's called emotional regulation disorder. So when he gets upset, he has a hard time upsetting, like he can't gauge his emotions and he can't really process them well, right? Mm-hmm. And so he started saying herbs in, herbs out, herbs in, herbs out. And I was cracking up because he was really trying to regulate his ups, like how upset he was. He was trying to calm himself. And it was such a cool moment to go, like, this show just taught him how to, like, get a grip on himself. Like, he's, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. And I'm just addicted to the show because of stuff like that. You know, like, I'm addicted to it because it's this, I don't know, it's got a lot of magic to it, I feel like.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was actually going to ask you about, is as an activist and a mother and a black mother and a mother of black children, this show, I mean, obviously, you know, you've mentioned it already, but how has this show kind of impacted where maybe how you've gone about pushing for change or encouraging your kids to do certain, to live a certain way, or raising your kids? What are some other ways that you've seen that kind of either impact the way you go about that or impact your children directly?
Well, great story. This is a good Kipo story that I have that I can tell you that's really awesome. So awesome. My 11-year-old daughter just came out as gay to me. she is 11. Her name's Phoenix. And she came out after watching Kipo. So, like, she watched Kipo with me. And I could tell she was, like, feeling a little, like, some type of way about it. The episode where we found out that Benson's gay, right? Mm-hmm. And she goes upstairs. And then she came downstairs and she was crying. And I was like, Phoenix, what is wrong? And she was, you know, like, really upset. And she's like, are you still going to love me if I tell you something? And I'm like, kiddo, there is literally nothing you could do, like, literally at all, that I wouldn't love you for. You know, like, there's, I mean, unless you tell me you've been murdering puppies and, like, stashing them in the garage, and then, like, I might freak out a little bit. And, like, and she started laughing, you know, and she, because we do that, you know, that's how we kind of, I like to make jokes with my kids, and it's a way we, like, break the ice, you know? And she started laughing, and she said, Mom, I think, you know, I don't like boys. And I was like, nobody likes boys when they're 11, Phoenix. Boys are trash. And she started laughing a little bit more. And she's like, no, I think, like, I like girls. Like, I like girls. And I was like, oh, okay. She was like, yeah, I think that I'm like, you said, I think I'm gay. You know, like, I like this friend of mine. And I was like, okay. And that was it. That was literally it. And she's been out ever since, and it was just like this big moment in our house. But it was funny because, like, she obviously, I kind of knew a little bit, you know, but, like, at that age, you don't really want to say too much. You just kind of support them and wherever they go. I mean, I'm new at this.
Kind of find it on their own.
Yeah, and I've never done this before. I am freaking brand new at this parenting shit, bro. I just am out here trying to be a good human. I have no prior parenting experience. She's my firstborn. So, like, you know, but that was, like, it. And it, but it spurred this conversation we were able to have, and we were able to talk about it. And she's, like, loving this whole Troy and Benson arc. She's, like, so into it. And, like, I love that she's seeing this, and she's seeing that this is okay, because we live in Mississippi where homosexuality is literally punished. You know, people, you know, can be fired from their jobs for being gay because we passed some very hateful laws here. If Phoenix was to tell other kids at school because of the Southern Baptist roots here, you know, they might not let her play with her, etc. Like, she has a hard road ahead of her. She's not just black. She's not just a black kid, but she's a black gay kid, so, like, she's gonna have some struggles, but I want her to be like Kipo, and I want her to be unwavering in her person, and I want her to be okay with loving whoever she wants to love. She may, you know, decide something else, who knows. I mean, when you're 11, you know stuff, you don't know stuff. And I don't know what she feels, but I know that she felt it strongly enough in her person. And that's how she is. That it's not going to change, you know. You know, I feel like this was her moment for her to come out. And some people come out when they're 16. Some people come out when they're 55. But my kid right. came out at 11 because she knows that's who she is. And she's always been that kind of kid who just knows who she is. And yeah. I'm glad for that. I'm glad for shows that address that, because as open-minded as I am, and I always want to be, I don't know all the answers to how to do all this stuff or how to broach these conversations. Having the sex talk was terrible. It was fucking terrible.
I can imagine.
It's literally terrible. I don't don't recommend it. It's a horrible. It's horrible. Mainly because of our puritanical values that have made us feel like it's hard to talk about these kind of things. You know what I'm saying? So it's like made everybody feel really shameful. But like,
right.
These types of things, there's no parent guide. Well, there probably is, but it's like really shitty and probably written by an old white man. So like I've definitely had to adjust and learn things. Mm-hmm. So I like shows like this for my children at the end of the day, because it opens up a pathway for these conversations and it puts positive values and positive representations of these things in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more media like that.
We do.
We need so much more.
Yeah, I honestly wish that, you know, people that I knew and went to even high school with that had this show when they were that age. Because, you know, even to this day, I see people, you know, being hateful towards my friends and towards entire groups of people based on race or based on their sexuality. And it seems like it's not if they had this growing up, even if they didn't identify with those things, they would be less hateful because they'd have a better understanding. They wouldn't just see this person as a stereotype. They wouldn't just be afraid of this person. They wouldn't just see this person as someone who's from a different walk of life than from them.
And I like that. It approaches the conversation and it shows all these different groups of mutants too. And like how at the end of the day, once a threat, you know, is over all of them, they start to realize, you know, like, oh man, like we're not so different after all. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I love that unifying threat. And, you know, the unifying threat right now that we're trying to do is we're trying to dismantle white supremacy. All of us. Black and brown adjacent people, white people are trying to dismantle it right now currently, you know, and control and slavery and all these terrible things. And it addresses that in Kipo wildly, which is crazy, right? Yeah. And it addresses our treatment of animals and our treatment of all kinds of things. Like it really touches on a lot. And I think that this type of media that touches on so many radical things, having our children consume this can only make us better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it normalizes that thought for them growing up.
Yeah.
Instead of normalizing some kind of, and obviously I'm not someone who thinks that necessarily that cartoons or video games or anything cause like cartoon violence or violence in general, but I think normalizing those conversations through the means of art and media is so important.
Yep. I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more.
And actually, so something that you brought up with talking about how we treat animals, and that I feel like would have fit better earlier in the podcast, but why not bring it up now, is Scarlemagne's entire character is super parallel to something like Wolf, or to Wolf's backstory, where, you know, you see him have a loving home and then all of a sudden not have that. And what that does to him, and how he, unlike Wolf, is completely impervious to that, and he lashes out, and he wants to control everyone. He wants everyone to worship him.
It shows you how drama can go.
Mm-hmm.
Drama can create a villain, or trauma can create a hero. I've allowed my trauma at certain points in my life to make me a villain, I believe. I've definitely not always been the kindest or the best. Definitely beat a few people up, done some dumb shit. And I've also done great good in my life. And I think the dichotomy of those two things, showing both sides of what trauma can do, is important, because at the end of the day, it also kind of shows a theme of like, how insidious trauma or systemic racism is. Like, you might get one person who gets out of it alive, but the other person might be consumed by it. And I think it's important to see that, because in that show, if they wouldn't have had that damage, that real turn of anger and rage, you know, then you wouldn't feel it. And Wolf and has anger and rage too. She just is trying to conquer it. We don't know where Wolf's going to go at the end. Like, you know, you don't know, because she, at one point she breaks off from Kipo, and then you're like, maybe she's really done. You know, you don't know. You want her to be there, but we don't know where her anger and her rage are going to take her. She's not dealt with all of it yet. She hasn't processed it all yet in the show as it's going through. And the same can kind of be said for Scarlet. He's just kind of filled with hatred.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like it's an accurate representation of trauma and what it can do to people and the places it can take you in your mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, you even see him, the way he responds as someone who's been so deeply hurt, the way he responds to Kipo is so interesting, because Kipo is just so unwavering in her compassion and love and pursuit of good that, you know, when she's with Scarlemagne, she doesn't treat him like an enemy. She treats him like a friend, almost like a brother. And seeing how he kind of reacts to that, and how he rejects it, and how he almost breaks through multiple times, but then something snaps him back. And the ways that that's treated with kind of regressing to a state of being traumatized is so raw and relatable and realistic.
It's very realistic. In working through my own personal traumas, I definitely have had moments of regression, like big moments. And I definitely, you always hurt people you love, right?
Right.
Because it's a safe place, and like, sometimes you hate the people that you love the most. I don't know. I just found Scarlemagne to be very interesting. At first, he seems like this wild character, but the more we get revealed about Scarlemagne, the more you're able to understand where he came from. It's almost kind of like the Joker, you know, movie that was just out recently. Like, you can kind of see why people snap. You can see why people get so hurt. And you can see that, like, this is just a hurt person, and hurt people hurt people.
Right.
You know?
This is kind of taking a little bit of a turn, but something that really stuck out to me about this show, as well as obviously the characters and the way it lets those characters develop and how it respects the characters' stories and the things that have happened to the characters, and we kind of touched on this earlier, but the music in this show is so damn good.
So dope.
I think one of my favorite things about it is it lets the genre of hip hop, it kind of destigmatizes the genre of hip hop to me. Like, it doesn't just lock it into one specific kind. It lets it grow. Every single group has like a different kind of take on it. Every kind of group of mutes, that is. And that's something that I loved about that. So I was just curious, what would you say is your favorite, like, group of mutes theme? And what was your favorite track from the show in general?
Definitely the Newt and Wolves song. Like, where they okay, so, like, my style of hip-hop is definitely more like that style of hip-hop. Mm-hmm. You know, like, underground hip-hop. Like, people just, like, bebopping and rapping, and it's, like, conscious hip-hop. But this is, like, ultra-conscious hip-hop, because it's, like, about space and shit. But it's definitely the vibe that I like the most for me. And I like the Vipers, like, rock style and everything. Like, I dug that, too. Like, that's really cool. But, like, definitely the Newton Wolves whole vibe, you know, brainiacs, like, everything else, and like, kind of savage and ruthless with their intelligence. I loved that. Just appealed to me, that, like, their whole vibe just appealed to me a lot. Like, I love the Timbercats for who they are and their friendship and their loyalty, but I fucking love the Newton Wolves for their intelligence and their savagery, like, at the same time. Like, I love that they're not just savages, but they're highly intelligent savages,
And they're not, like, weak little brainiacs either.
No, no,
like, I feel savages. Like that's something that cartoons portray so badly is like, yeah, the kind of big and strong equals dumb, smart equals small and frail.
Yeah, and in this show, they flip that on its head so many times. Like, mm-hmm, look at the hummingbirds with the bombs. I mean, like, they're, like, the tiniest, nicest things, and then they've got, like, the most damaging, insane bombs. And, the show is wild. It definitely takes, like, stereotypes and like, flips them on their head a little bit. It's almost like, mm-hmm, anywhere you think it's about to go, it doesn't go there. Like,
yeah.
And everything that you wanted, like, where you wanted it to go, like, mm-hmm, even though you didn't know you wanted it, it takes it there. And then, yeah, it enriches that experience. But the Newton Wolves, for me, like, they did it. Like, mm-hmm, they just did it so well. And Yuzen Jizza, like, so good.
Yeah, what better casting is there? Like, that was something I was going to bring up, was that, like, I feel like the way you're describing that kind of savage genius is so analogous to the Jizza and Wu-Tang in general. Like,
yeah, Wu-Tang Clan is nothing to fuck with. They're nothing to fuck with, in case you didn't know. In case the listeners didn't know, they're definitely nothing to fuck with.
We should do a podcast about 36 Chambers sometime.
I'm 100% in. So just go ahead and sign me up. Awesome. Now. Put me on the calendar. Like, I'm down. I love the celebration of blackness, and I love the, mm-hmm, diversity of blackness as a black person. Getting to see that personified in a TV show, let alone a TV show for kids, was fantastic. I want to see us celebrated. And I want to see us be diverse. And I want to see us have these beautiful things. And hip-hop is so deeply part of our culture. Like, mm-hmm, it's so part of our culture. And of fucking course hip-hop's thriving in the fucking apocalypse. Of course it is. That shit is apocalypse music. You know, like, it's just so good.
Right.
Like, listening to, like, the Oz the Originator tracks. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Like, they're so good. Like, they're so good. And yeah, seeing Benson talk about his 200-year-old sneakers, like, come on. That was, like, one of the best moments, because, like, I'm like that with my sneakers. Like, I've got a pair of sneakers from the 80s that are collector sneakers. I'm like, please don't touch my sneakers. They're, like, 40 years old. You know, like.
Right.
And I think it's so dope. This is everything in my brain I could have ever said, like, I wanted to be made into a book or into a movie, you know, like a full-length movie or something, like, came out here. And it's incredible. It's just, the more you watch it, the more you realize, like, look at the rats. Look at Ratland. How much did you love Ratland?
Ratland was great. And also, I like the slight dig at Disney.
Yeah, I love that. I love the, you know, we gotta love the dig at Disney. Like,
yeah.
And I love the fact that at the end there on season two, where Ratland was the car, was their van.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything about this show. To me is so, man, I had a bad fucking day. I'm gonna watch some Kipo, and your day changes. Like,
yeah,
tell me your day didn't change. Like, we've had a rough couple of weeks, people in this industry, right? We've had a rough couple of weeks. When you were watching that this past week, doing all the crazy shit that was going on, Kipo was like fucking amazing, right? It was like,
oh yeah,
you watch it and your whole person changes.
Exactly. Like, I woke up when I first started watching, the day I started watching Kipo, I woke up because it was like right after the Star Wars Squadrons reveal. So I woke up and I was like, I need Star Wars now. and I was like, wait, I want to do this episode with Zombie. I should watch Kipo first. And I started watching it, and it brought that same level of magic, of comfort, of kind of celebration of good eventually prevailing. And I was also feeling really burnt out on, like, playing games, because that's basically all I've been doing since quarantine started, like a lot of other people I know. And so having that kind of that moment to press pause on the violence and mayhem of something like God of War, which I just finished for the first time, and switching to something like Kipo, where it's all about love and celebrating love and celebrating being who you are, was so profoundly refreshing.
Yep. I agree. It's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's like, it packs a powerful punch, right? Like, you're we're going through all this shit. You're going through it too. I mean, you're a cis white male, right? So like, you're going through it too in a way. You're witnessing you having to stand up and dismantle a system that benefits you. That's kind of tough. I mean, it is a little tough. Not as tough as, you know, being a victim of systemic racism, but it's definitely kind of like, what the fuck? Am I part of this? How do I fix this? You know, like, I know that that is on most good people, most good white people's mind.
It's also hard seeing other people like me lash out as a result of people saying that this needs to be better.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot, and it's polarizing and terrible. And then you go see something like Kipo, and you go and you're like, okay, this isn't so, you know, all these things are so polar, but I don't know. It subtly changes your mindset, that show.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to explain that.
I think I gather what you're saying, because even like slight things you'll see in that world, at least for me, obviously on top of just the love and magic of the show and the characters. But something that I wanted to bring up earlier was the Frogs theme, which is like this kind of French super fast paced hip hop song. That's like, I don't remember the name of the song, but it's that style is very familiar to me, because in high school I had a friend who moved here from Guinea, and you know, he was in my French class, and he and I were the only two guys in that class, so naturally we kind of gravitated to each other, because that's how high school goes. And hearing that theme reminded me that I should reach out to him, because I haven't spoken to him in a while. And even just things like that, where it like, you, it gives you reasons and it gives you places to find positivity in your life.
Yeah. You can get consumed right now looking at all the horrible shit.
Mm-hmm.
You will lose yourself. You will lose your sanity. If you have anxiety like me, I have severe anxiety and PTSD. Everywhere I look right now is fucking triggering. Mm-hmm. And I have found that by, at the end of the night, getting off all my social media and putting on an episode of Kipo, I feel my mindset changed. I feel recharged, and I feel like it's literally self-care to watch that show. And it's weird to think about that, like, as a TV show, because sometimes I do that with, like, Queer Eye or something like that, but then I still get really weepy and blah, blah, blah. But Kipo is just, like, really good, and it kind of recharges my don't get tired of doing good meter, you know, and I, like, can get back up and be an activist. I mean, you follow me. You know what I talk about all the time.
Right.
I'm not wavering in who I am. It is hard for me at times as a mother, as a woman, and as a black person, not a person of color, but I'm black. It is hard for me. Right now, I am a sexual assault survivor. I am deeply triggered by what I am seeing in the games industry. And I would be lying if I said that I myself hadn't been a victim to people sending me extremely inappropriate messages or even inappropriate pictures as a streamer. Our lives have got to change. We have to do better. And when you see shows like Kipo, I feel like subtly we're moving the needle towards just being better. Because if you're consuming this, and the media and everything eventually has to do with what you consume, because we talk about the power of white supremacy in media, etc. So if we're consuming media that's portraying black people the way that we should be portrayed, that's portraying love and kindness and acceptance, and that is portraying doing what is right, even when it is hard and you're scared, we're moving the needle.
Right. Absolutely.
We're moving it towards making the world a better place. Maybe it's slowly to whoever, but I feel it very instantaneously with this show.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you did, but I mean, for me,
I know exactly what you mean. You know, from the kind of tense, a little bit of build up to the reveal that Benson was gay, to an entirely black or non-white cast of core characters. That's so rare. You never see that. Ever.
Yeah.
And, like you said, that it feels like that's pushing the needle in the right direction.
Yeah.
All right, so I think it's about that time in the part. It's oh my god, wow! I am fumbling over my words because I forgot how to intro this part. It's about that part in the show where we take input from members of our audience, where I ask across various social media platforms about what people think of this show and memories and attachment that they have to it. And so far, we only have one, and it's from my friend John, at Mainman John Adaya on Twitter. He says, Jamak equals best boy. He doesn't just go from villain to friend. He's got to be convinced over the course of both seasons. Also, Panther Arms, yes, please.
100% agree with this person. They're obviously a person of taste. I do like Jamak's plotline, like I told you Jamak earlier. I like him because he's real. He's so used to just looking out for himself and doing, and he like identified heavily with this group, and then that kind of fell apart. And then he's like trying to find out who he is as a person, but he's like, man, I'm trying to deal with my own shit, Kipa. What the hell? Like,
yeah, and he's just, and he's still holding on to the identity of the Mod Frogs too. Like
he has
the way
to.
He talks about like his fashion and his tie, and he's like, you can see that he's struggling with that. So then when Kipa brings something else that's like world shattering to him, it shakes him.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of how we all deal with change in reality. Mm-hmm. We're like, bruh, but this. We're all holding on right now in the death throes of the end of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. We're holding on to it because so much of it is so ingrained in how we operate every day. We don't know how to live without it. Even us as black people, we don't know how to deal with the chains being lifted at times. Like it doesn't, we don't even know how to trust it. Right? We don't know how to move in it. It's this whole thing, and it's crazy, and it's scary, but I love the fact that Jamak is, like, still up for it, but he's, like, having to work through being up for it, and, like, what does that say about him? And is he, like, a good person? Mute? Is he a good mute? Or is he, you know, is he this lone person? Is he alone in this world? Like, there's so many complicated emotions Jamak goes through. And I like Jamak. I like that he really wasn't a villain. He was just trying to look out for himself. You can't really call him a villain because he wasn't really like some... He wasn't really a villain. Like, he was just like, I'm looking out for me and the Mod Frogs. We're doing our thing. We need to get... You know, we're looking out for success of ourselves. I'm not bad. I'm just looking out for myself. You know, right. Scarlemagne is a villain.
Yeah.
But they're just looking out for themselves as mutes, because mutes look out for each other. And they don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I love that part. I love that arc. And I love what that says, because I feel like Jamak, this is me putting like this parallel here, is like my white friends who are starting to learn about white supremacy and like how much it benefits them and everything else. And they're kind of struggling with their privilege and they're kind of like falling apart, but they like ultimately want to do the right thing, but they don't understand or know how to live without like the stuff that they've had so far. And so like they want to be right, but like, they're also like, but damn, it sucks over here. We're like, yeah, we told you, bro. Like, and, so like Jamak for me is like my allegory for like a white person struggling with their white privilege and like becoming very quickly aware of it and realizing like earth-shatteringly, like, what does this mean for me and who am I anymore?
Right.
It's like a really good like metaphor there.
I never thought about that it that way, but that's that's super apt.
You see where I'm going though? It's like very apt for it. Like, maybe they didn't mean it that way, but that's how I feel. That's how I feel about the show. Like, I'm watching it and I'm seeing this and I'm like, man, that's how my white friends must feel. So like, I like that. I like it and I can identify with it very easily. But he's definitely not a villain. Like, I don't think all white people are villains, you know, either. I just think like as a whole, y'all are trash. But like individually, like you guys, there's like a team, right? White supremacy is a team, and you're just wearing that jersey. It doesn't mean like you're just wearing the jersey. The person in the jersey isn't necessarily bad, but the jersey's bad. This is the, you know, so like that's where we're at.
Right.
No, I'm really glad that you liked the show. Can we just talk about that for a second? I was like, I told him to watch this weird cartoon and he's probably going to think like it's so stupid. But like, I was really enjoying seeing your like reaction on Twitter and like how much you were actually digging the show. So like, I'm actually glad you like, I feel like we bonded.
we kind of did.
We're like keepo friends now. It like forged our friendship, you know, like, I think it was really cool. Like, and also I really enjoyed the idea of this podcast. I was explaining it to one of my friends and he was like, that sounds like a really good show for like, cause I was like, it's about like media that you're like comforted by, blah, blah, blah. He's like, that sounds great for people with anxiety. I need to listen to this.
Yeah, that was kind of the, you know, the whole world going to shit was kind of the catalyst for me starting this. I've talked about this kind of here and there, but like, yeah, you know, I think everyone, whether or not you have diagnosed anxiety, is anxious right now. Everything is putting people on edge. There's a lot of reasons to be angry, to be sad, to be afraid. And I don't necessarily know if giving people an escape is what I seek, but I do want to encourage conversations about things that people love and make them happy.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that, again, I'm so glad that, you know, not only that you recommended this show to me because I ended up loving it, but that I did love it, and that we were able to have such like a genuine conversation about this, because this hasn't really happened yet, but I feel like I'm trying to only do episodes of this show about things that I've consumed and that I've watched, because I feel like that's the only way I can really be genuine about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I should have got you to watch Gilmore Girls. Damn.
I'm sorry.
I said I should have got you to watch Gilmore Girls. Damn.
I'm actually kind. I've seen a good amount of Gilmore Girls because my girlfriend really likes that show.
It's so good. It's so good,
man. Yeah, that the dialogue is so snappy and so good. I love it. But yeah, I think, you know, Kipo specifically is one of those things that it brought me back. It was almost like the scene in Ratatouille. And I don't know if I referenced this scene before, but I'm sure I'll reference this scene a hell of a lot of times in the future on this show. But the scene in Ratatouille where that like super jaded food critic takes one bite of the dish and then he has a flashback to when he's a little kid in the countryside with his mom. And that's what Kipo was a lot like that for me, because I was raised on kind of like the mentality of Saturday morning cartoons. You know, my favorite, one of my favorite shows of all time is Looney Tunes, and after that it's like Clone Wars, Naruto, a bunch of like cartoons and stuff, and none of them necessarily are tonally the same as Kipo, but a lot of them kind of draw from the same well.
Yeah. I agree. So glad. That's why it did it for me too. It was like that reference of growing up and me watching Saturday morning cartoons and just like vibing, and now I've got this great show I can consume with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not at all like too dumb for adults to watch in any way, shape, or form. Like, you don't feel like you're watching like a super kid show. It's very cinematic quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, but no, definitely.
I appreciate definitely. You having me on the show.
Zombie, now it's the part of the show where you get to plug all the awesome things you do on the internet.
I am Zombie Kills on all social media, but oh, I stream. So awesome. Yeah, I'm Zombie Kills across the board, ZombieKillz. And I stream on Twitch Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Central until 10:30 p.m. Central. So it's like the same schedule all the time. You can catch me playing games badly, but being really fun and funny and having a good time with friends. I love to speak about activism. I like to talk to people about the ways that they can become and be better humans. And I like to raise awareness for things that are very important to me, like prison reform. So if you catch me on Twitter, you'll catch me talking about Pokemon or maybe fighting the man at any moment. So make sure you follow me on all socials so you get the full spectrum of who I am as a person.
And I can vouch for Zombie as probably one of the best Twitter follows. Like, I'm so glad that I listened to that episode of Spawn on Me, because otherwise I don't think I would have ended up following you. But like, genuinely, you're one of my favorite Twitter followers on my timeline.
I feel so cool. Twitter right follows. Now. I feel really cool now. I'm always just like posting what the fuck ever I feel like, and I'm like, people must think I'm so weird. Like,
well, it's so important to be genuine, you know. You don't see that all the time. In
I mean, I was real genuine on the Spun On Me, and you know, people, I thought it was gonna make me, people were gonna be really mean about me, which I got a little bit of that, but like, I got a whole lot of people who were really like, they dug my reality, and I'm like, this has been me the whole time, so it's kind of cool, because like, I was the smaller unknown on the podcast, and it's really boosted the shit out of my career. It's kind of wild, which is a huge freaking blessing that I got to do what I do all the time at a time where it was needed for me to do what I do all the time. Yeah.
You know? And what better place than Spun On Me? I feel like that's such a great place to be.
Yeah, Khalif is really dope. Like, I knew Khalif ahead of time. Like, we'd been in the same circle, but we hadn't been, like, you know, I'm just, like, I'm kind of in a, I was on Mixer, okay? I was in a whole different universe. And so, like, coming over to Spun On Me was, it was life-changing. I mean, it made me choose to come to Twitch. Thank God I did, because that ship sunk really fucking fast.
So bad. I have lots of words for that.
Yeah, if you ever want someone to talk about that on a podcast, I am ready. I invested a good bit of time there, and I'm so glad that Spun On Me like spurred me to leave, because I just wanted to see other black people and be around other black people. And then it came out how racist the platform was, and I was like, bitch, I told y'all. Yeah. Like, I told everybody. I told everybody on that Spun On Me podcast. Like, I told everybody what I thought about it, and it went to shit literally 2 exact weeks later.
Wow, you only just switched over that quickly?
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's that quick. I've been here for, I think 20 days now, so, like, almost 3 weeks. Nice. Yeah, so 20 days. So, like, it's not been that long. I like it, though.
That's all. Yeah, I just switched over a couple months ago from YouTube.
I don't know anything about YouTube other than my kids are addicted to it.
YouTube is like a shit show in an entirely different way. Instead of the platform being outwardly racist, they're probably internally racist, but there are a lot more racist people in chat and a lot more anti-Semitic people in chat, and
with racists real good on Twitch. I've had a lot. I actually only had very few racist viewers on Mixer. Because there's so few viewers on Mixer, but I've had a lot of racism on Twitch, like a lot, like an exhaustive amount.
Yeah, I just started, but like, oh man, YouTube people, because it's so easy to make alts, so people would just come into the chat and just be disgusting with the same account. But anyways, sorry, that kind of got derailed. But yeah, go find Zombe on all the different social media accounts she talked about earlier. I will have everything listed at the top of the description down below. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Twitch at @chas_mke, and you can find me on YouTube at just Chaz, that's chas. And you can also, as of couple days ago, you can find my work over at DualShockers, and I'll have a link to that in the description as well. Anyways, thank you all very much for listening. Peace out.
Bye.
All life started with the Big Bang.
An explosion so great from which we all sprang.
The universe dispersed mass, traverses space, time past, space expanding mad fast. Stars made of light and gas. Cosmos with billions of stars gleaming.
These are the events that brought us wolves into being.
New time, new time.
Now you know our name, and you know we train to wax poetic and wane with superior brain. Evolution's tame, our instincts we aim to wax poetic and wane with our superior brain. For years we ask how, but we should ask why.
Below a canopy of nebulas in the sky.
Orbiting matter, inspiring thought.
And in this perfect vacuum, our pale blue dots.
New times, new times, new times, new times.
Newton rules explain the knowledge we gain. To wax poetic and wane with our superior brain. Evolution's tame, our instincts we aim. To wax poetic and wane with our superior brain. Protons, neutrons.
time, folding together like a futon,
colliding in cold like a perfect storm,
creating galaxies and planets
like the one that we're on.
We're talking about Earth, y'all. Alright, now it's time to break it down. With every kind of star that has ever been classified. We're talking giants, subgiants, red giants, blue giants,
luminous giants,
very luminous supergiants,
and less luminous supergiants.
Pulsar, neutron star, when they rotate together, that's a binary star. Class W, class O, class L, class F. Do we have any other stars?
Oh, most death.
New Neutron.
Red dwarf, white dwarf, brown dwarfs are fun. If you want to see a yellow dwarf, look to our sun.
But don't look at the sun.
Oh, no, don't do that.
And that's everything we learned about the known universe.
The end.